Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho police.
Oh my God.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucka.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics, which today are elections. It's primary day, one of many. There are big elections today in Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, and Texas. And to help us discuss some big issues as midterms enter full swing is Natasha Murphy, who is the Chief of Staff at Black Girls Vote. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to today's conversation.
Yeah, definitely. So just to sort of like start for context, and then we'll get more into this at the end, what do you guys do at Black Girls Vote? Tell us kind of the background and what you're focused on.
Sure. So Black Girls Vote, we started back in November of 2015. So really, you know, before the pivotal 2016 election. Uh-huh. And we are all about engaging, educating, and empowering Black women, particularly those 18 to 25, to leverage our collecting voting power to transform our lives and improve the lives of those who live in our community. So our founder, Nike Robinson, recognized that Black women are such pillars of democracy. You know, we constantly show up at the polls. We encourage our family and friends to do the same, but we aren't getting policy in exchange for that voting power. And so, you know, BGV is really focused on not just educating and registering voters, but also holding our elected officials accountable for a lot of the promises that they make on the campaign trail and ensuring that they enact meaningful policy that's actually going to make a difference in the lives of Black women.
Wow, that must be really easy because they do that automatically.
Oh, yeah. We rarely have anything to do.
Yeah, wow. What an easy job.
What an easy, simple, easy to do list. I mean, so you mentioned like Black women have tremendous political power. Democrats specifically rely on them. But I mean, a lot of types of candidates do. So we had Alexis Miguel Johnson of Planned Parenthood on the pod yesterday, and we did touch a little bit on Bill Cassidy's comments, but we didn't really dig in, which I'd love to do. While we have you, I mean, Senator Bill Cassidy made very disturbing comments over the weekend about Black maternal mortality in Louisiana, the state he represents. This man's a medical doctor. These comments, you can't say enough how ignorant and dehumanizing they are. But also, this man runs for office in a state where a third of the population, and therefore its voters, are Black. Louisiana, I think, has like an anti-choice Democratic governor right now. So I guess to start, like, the political power of Black and non-white voters will only keep growing. Why aren't these guys like even trying?
Great question, Amanda. And I was honestly horrified by Senator Cassidy's statements over the weekend, you know, as someone who, clearly as a Black woman, but also as someone who also works in the health professions. It is incredibly discouraging, disparaging, and honestly disgusting for a clinician to make a comment like that, dismissing the disparate outcomes and honestly very negative experiences that a lot of Black women in his state and across the country experience in the birthing and postpartum process. And like you mentioned, it's even worse because on top of being a clinician, he's an elected official and he is empowered to make decisions and choices. And the fact that he was felt so comfortable sharing this horrible viewpoint, you know, I think it really, really speaks volumes. And it's just, it's so easy to claim ignorance, you know, for, you know, maybe a regular person, but as an elected official who is representing so many people of color and women of color, it is honestly baffling why he would make a statement like that, knowing that it's, you know, Black women who are showing up at the polls and, you know, marching at the forefront of a lot of these issues. You know, I think we're at a point now where we're sick and tired of having to try and prove our worth and show why we should be treated, you know, with the same respect and dignity that, you know, other groups and demographics receive.
I mean, for me, it was a little disturbing as a Black woman because, you know, when I go to the doctor, when they ask me how many sexual partners I have, it's like, well, if you count losers, I don't, it's not that much. And yeah. The doctor says that you have to count losers. So, you know, I'm
biased.
Sorry,
that's...
Governor, or is it Bill Cassidy, Senator Bill Cassidy, it don't work like that. I'm sorry for making a joke, but honestly, yeah, no, it is just like everyone says, like these anti-choice laws and all of this is is their way to like, they want more white babies. They want to like not lose. Like, it's just so clear that they, who they value and all that stuff. And But, you know, I mean, it's too late. Like, we're all getting more control and more power, and Black girls' vote is winning. So, you know, you got the easiest job in the world, Natasha.
Well, as you were saying that, Millie, I thought, like, now that when he was saying that, like, he really thought he was doing something. Like, he would have a receptive audience being like, oh, in that case, which is even more disturbing, that he felt so comfortable that there would be enough people just like, oh, I guess it's not that bad then, which is so...
Oh, yeah, and you're right. Black, yeah, we shouldn't count Black women. Like, oh, my God.
Right. Yeah.
It was kind of like, honestly, to bring it back to a Betches thing, it's like Chris Harrison talking about, you know, the racist Matt James bachelorette at the Antebellum Ball.
Oh, yes,
and right. Rachel Lindsay just let him keep talking and digging himself in a deeper hole. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Everything goes back to the Bachelor. Yeah,
maybe we need Bill Cassidy on the podcast, actually. See what else he says.
I feel like there's more there.
Natasha, Black Girls Vote works specifically to advance Black women's power in society through education and public policies that impact them, as you said. So in that vein, what other issues are you watching closely this election cycle? What are some non-negotiables for candidates who can say that they support Black women? Like, if you want to be an anti-Bill Cassidy, what are the things you should be saying?
I like that framing.
Yeah.
As we approach the midterm elections and kind of work our way through this very interesting and kind of tenuous primary season, Black Girls Vote, we are really shifting a lot of our focus away from our other core issues around advancing equality education, healthcare, and economic development. We're paying very close attention to really voting rights legislation and poverty. Mm. And so one thing that has been a huge focus and major issue area for us, you know, in a lot of our locals and state advocacy, as well as federal advocacy, is gerrymandering, you know. Post-census, we got through that whole process and endeavor, but now the legislative district maps are being redrawn and they're changing. And there are a lot of areas where districts are being split up, and it really is just another tactic of voter suppression and, you know, voter manipulation. And so we've already seen efforts happening in Texas and Florida and Kansas where, you know, the district maps have changed and voters are not pleased, and it's making things difficult more difficult for people to engage in democracy. And so it's really, really important that our existing elected officials, but also candidates, you know, indicate where they stand on, you know, gerrymandering, both in the past and moving forward, because we need to ensure that we're not making it more difficult for people to have their voices heard. A lot of times folks will focus so much on, oh, well, you know, it's just a map that's changing. It's no big deal. But, you know, there's instances in which you're diluting the political and electoral power of an entire group of people, or you're changing voting locations. You know, folks have to go further and further out to cast their ballot. And so, you know, that's one area that we've been focused on. And then also ending the filibuster. A lot of our advocacy at the federal level, you know, it's so frustrating to see poignant and potentially impactful legislation just die in Congress because of a very archaic system. And so, you know, we need to modernize. We need to have a legislative process that allows us to get things done. And so, you know, for Black women, we know how important it is to, you know, have a seamless process where, you know, a legislator can introduce a bill, it gets passed, and then we start implementing it.
Imagine.
Right. A majority
vote.
Wouldn't
that be interesting if more people voted for the bill and then it passed?
Yes.
That would be wonderful. And yeah, to your point of what you were saying, you know, I feel like when we hear ignorant statements like what we talked about right at the top of the podcast from Bill Cassidy, I think that a lot of those legislators are counting on gerrymandering and just the reduction in voting rights to protect them. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think if he really actually felt beholden to the Black women who are his constituents, he would be as thoughtless with what he's saying.
And I feel like they use, you know, gerrymandering, and they use it to discourage people and be like, well, your vote doesn't matter. And also, your vote doesn't matter. You have no power. It's going to be a pain in the ass to vote. How difficult is it to register? Like, all these obstacles are one more thing. And, you know, economic conditions haven't changed for people. You know, people have to work. We don't have voting off as a holiday. Like, they are just making it so that, you know, they can continue in power.
Yeah. And I think after, you know, today's elections in Georgia, there will be a lot of, if the turnout is good, I think people will say, oh, people were able to out-organize the restrictions, but you literally cannot do that with gerrymandering. This is going through the courts. Like, yeah. it feels like there's nothing you can do, but what specifically are some like advocacy things that people can try to do around gerrymandering? Is it like a matter of getting in touch with representatives, making sure?
It is.
Like you mentioned, like nobody talks about gerrymandering, but maybe it should be something we ask every single politician, like, what's your stance on abortion? What's your stance on gerrymandering? What will you do to end it?
Exactly. I agree, Amanda. I feel like gerrymandering is not one of, you know, the interesting or kind of sexy policy topics that make it on its way to, you know, a pamphlet, you know, right. promoting a candidate's particular position. But it's absolutely an area where it is impacting and oftentimes hindering folks' ability to access the ballot. And so I stand by my statement that we do need to figure out where our elected officials and candidates stand on the issue. And for, you know, regular constituents and citizens out there, I encourage you to engage with your local and state board of elections.
Okay, we are back, just the three of us. We've lost Natasha for now, but that was lovely.
Like I said, she has great energy. You guys, you heard her energy, but I would say the visual of her energy was great as well.
Very true.
BGV.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
It's so great that we had her today, literally on the day that Georgia is going to the polls for its primary, which I feel like Georgia has just become like the number one battleground for all of the stuff we were just talking about. Like the number one show of like Black women's political power with Stacey Abrams. Mm. It's really, Georgia's really that bitch.
Really that bitch. Yeah, I guess we'll find out tomorrow. We'll do like a more thorough debrief tomorrow, but I'm really eager to see who wins this Republican primary for governor. That seems like the real kind of like test of Trump, because did you know Pence endorsed and is like campaigning with Brian Kemp, the current governor?
That's
Trump
really sad.
Endorsed David Perdue.
It's honestly sad that Mike Pence is trying anything at all. He needs to go.
He said he's going
to
run for
Hillary
president.
And just be what? He's not. He's not. I mean, he might say that that's what he's doing, but he might technically sign up, get the paperwork in, but right. No one's voting for Mike Pence for president. No one on this earth.
He just needs to do it to raise some money.
He really should pull a Hillary and just be walking around in the woods. That's where he should be.
Write a novel with your friend. Keep doing your podcast.
He has a podcast?
Relax. Oh, that's how he started. I mean, he started with like political
talk
radio.
He's a right-wing radio guy. That's his bread and butter.
Oh my God.
Being a boring Rush Limbaugh. You're Rush Limbaugh, but boring.
I'm like, I don't even know. It's like Maggie. I don't even know if I've heard him say anything, really.
Out loud?
I don't know if I can recognize his voice.
Mm-hmm. No. Oh, I could never recognize his voice.
Couldn't pick his voice out of a lineup. Oh, that's a fun game we should try to play Thursday. We can play a couple clips and we'll have to guess who Mike Pence is.
Like, which one of these is Mike Pence? I have no fucking idea.
But it's also like this David Perdue guy also was like such a snooze in the Senate. I just don't understand why. When Democrats run for office, you generally like, they've got a reason. They've got a motivation. There are certainly some. Like, I don't really know what Diane Feinstein's doing in there. But these Republicans.
Neither does she. Sorry.
Yeah. In that vein, just be rich. Just be rich.
Well, I think with some of these people, it really is like they're a rich white guy and they're like, what's another thing I could do to make myself rich and powerful?
Man,
I could do this.
What would you do if you, man, like, listen, I'm very happy where I'm at right now. Love working, love comedy, love creating. I would love to fuck off somewhere in like a tropical place and just hang out or live in a city and like in Europe and like get to eat.
Yeah.
Fresh,
what would you guys do
bread.
If you were a rich white guy? What would your move be?
I would open a doggy cafe / like play area in like the West Village that was like, a 2000 square feet. And I would probably have like a membership program. Not everybody could come. No, everybody could come. That's what I would do. I think about this all the time. That would be my dream job. I'd have like a doggy cafe. Like, I don't know if you could, there was one in the East Village I would model it after. What about you, Elise?
Oh,
I feel
yeah,
like you
that dog
it.
Restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done comedy there.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
It's a little chaotic. It might be a little chaotic. That's why
yeah,
I'm like, it might
I
have
know.
To.
Did
so
comedy
maybe that would
there.
Be too much for me.
I think if I was a rich white guy, I would go with a little bit what Millie was saying. Like, I'd fuck off somewhere. Maybe I would like get the Epstein Island discount, buy it at a cheap rate, sage the shit out of it from top to bottom, and start trying to import good vibes.
I love that.
Revive the entire area and make it an island where, honestly, probably I just invite my adult friends to chill. But if there are any children, they're just having fun. They're playing.
You're not going to take on making it like a full on feminist utopia for everybody.
Just no, it would just I just honestly, I think the only way to resettle it vibe wise is to just have it be chill and normal there for probably over 100 years.
Yeah, I feel like I split my time tropical and city because I feel like, okay, tropical could get boring after a few months, but tropical and like bustling city, but like being in a city and not having shit to like do or work, I'm sure is beautiful. I think I would also like fund some kind of experimental, like maybe do like universal income for like, you know, all these people.
Have a little
people.
Pet project.
Have a pet project, maybe make a film that, you know, no one can tell me what to do. I have all this money. Yeah, I would do some crazy shit like
that. We talked a couple weeks ago about how rich people in Tulsa basically have a fund to like get people to move there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a better, David Perdue, do that. Well, I guess like Florida, maybe Georgia has enough people. Do something like that. You can participate in public life without having to run for senator. You have the he has the personality of a raisin.
If you're rich enough, you can. You're more powerful than a senator.
Yeah,
totally.
Senator,
he's too
like,
rich to be a senator.
You got to see what Joe Manchin. You know, like
right, you got to run everything by Joe Manchin.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, you're only as powerful as Joe Manchin if you're a senator.
Precisely. Well, unfortunately, we do need to work to earn our income. For today, we're going to talk about business. Let's put our business lady hats on. This made me think, like, when do you guys feel most like a professional woman? I feel like I never do. When do you feel most like I am a business lady conducting my business?
Like the when I talk to my tax guy once a year.
Oh,
and
my
I say,
tax guy knows I'm not in the business. What do you
and
say?
I say, please help me. Please help me. I have one folder of emails where I put like receipts that for stuff that's vaguely related to my career. Is that good? And he's like, I'm going to help you. That's my biggest business woman time.
Yeah, I feel like paying things like I have, like now that I have two credit cards. Like
oh, that's a financial life.
Putting things away.
Portfolio.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I do fund my IRA, then I feel like a businesswoman.
Right.
If I buy when I invest $5 in corporate cannabis on my stock app, I feel like a businesswoman.
Oh yeah, I bought all this like fake stock, or not fake stock. I bought all this like joke stock in Nokia and AMC, like during the
joke
Wall
stock.
Street bets.
Yeah.
Well, it's a joke for me, but now I get like investor, like, I get invited to investor calls. And I'm like, what is happening? That's businesswoman.
Got it. Yeah. I was thinking, I feel like with the work from home culture, I never, like, I haven't put on like a nice outfit. We haven't had an in studio podcast guest in years. And sometimes I feel like it like impacts my self-esteem. Like I should probably get it together more because I'm like, I have like a job that's like important, but I'm just hanging around in loungewear all day in my bedroom. Like I'm not a real business lady.
I should get dressed and get ready every day. And then that girl that lives inside me who says that gets shouted down every day by the fact that I'm like, but also I really don't want.
And I don't have to.
And I don't have to.
Yeah, it's nice once every couple of months to put a button up on and tuck it in and feel like a business lady. But generally, I just feel like a tiny kid all the time. Paying for wedding stuff has made me feel a bit like a business lady.
That is true.
Because it's just numbers that are things I imagine
only negotiating
you see in business.
The contract.
Right.
Thing.
Right. Like I never use corporate speak in my actual job, but I find it myself using it with like other things just to be like, this is not personal. But we're going to talk about this right now.
Yeah.
That's when I put my business lady.
Wedding planning is businesswoman stuff.
Businesswoman stuff. The reason we're talking about this is because businesses are struggling in this political climate. There's a lot of expectations on them and some of them feel like they're under a lot of pressure. State Farm specifically, yes, the insurance company, has abandoned its program to distribute LGBTQ-themed books to teachers, community centers, and libraries. I'm not going to belabor this silly story too much, but I do think it's a nice springboard into just kind of a general discussion about it. So State Farm partnered with an organization that promotes LGBTQ teaching via speaking events, mentorship programs, advising parents of transgender children, all great, excellent stuff. It's like a vaguely mainstream group. You know, on their website, they have a bunch of other groups that they've worked with that are, you know, high profile. It was a very specific partnership, I think just among a group of agents to donate like this book, this bundle of three books. But the person who was notifying these agents made it seem like this big nationwide project, you know, targeting kindergartners with books about gayness. And it seems like people took issue with that and State Farm took it back and sent an email saying, we're actually not going to do this. We believe its chief diversity officer sent an email saying conversations about the subject matter in these books should actually happen at home. And then Libs of TikTok got that email. And I guess the story here is just that State Farm dipped its toe into this and then pulled it right back out. And it seems like it's that approach that consumers seem to punish people for. I mean, when you look at businesses that have been impacted by this reputationally negatively, the biggest one that's taken a hit seems to be Disney, perhaps because they kind of like were wishy-washy. So like I said, I don't think it's necessary that we like belabor this example, but it is interesting how much more companies have been forced into the political discourse, especially because there's the nation's oldest consumer protection agency. It's called Consumers Research. They're launching an advertisement campaign smearing State Farm. They're going to frame State Farm as being like super progressive in their activism, and they're spoofing State Farm's tagline, like a good neighbor, State Farm is here, with like a creepy neighbor, State Farm is here.
Okay.
It's so funny because, Black Twitter is like, oh, they're probably going to be reactionary because like the State Farm spokesman is this
Jake.
Like, yeah, Jake, who looks like Drake. He's like this handsome black man, and they're like, they're going to reactionary, like make him blonde. It's like get a flow, like kind of Karen looking State Farm, or make a blonde man or something, like, because they don't want to trigger anybody.
Well, yeah, it's what's interesting is it's just like, I feel like a lot of what we're seeing is like starting like 2016 to 2020, there became this huge wave of like companies taking political stances, I think. Sometimes genuinely and sometimes for clout.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing how shallow some of these diversity initiatives or whatever actually were, where like the second that there's actual pushback or that they they get an angry post on Libs of TikTok, it's like, okay, actually we're just scrapping the entire program. So it's like, so how committed were you even to doing this entire program? Or, you know, there are tons of companies who have like quietly shuttered their diversity arm in various ways recently. And it's like, I think that, yeah, they like, I remember people sounding the alarm about this in June of 2020, but being like, make sure to follow up with these companies that are making all these statements and posting these big, long, like, we stand with so-and-so, like, see where they are in a year and a half. And we see where they are in a year and a half. And it's like, they're shutting down everything because they don't want to get in trouble.
And I mean, I think it's just, I hate to skewer capitalism yet again, but when we start getting into like corporations are people, they have more power than people in the government, they have more power than human beings, then people start to have kind of parasocial, is it even parasocial relationships with companies?
I think that's an interesting way to put it, yeah.
Just like you see, you know, kind of like when a Real Housewife has views that you like, are shocked about because you imprinted all these things in this person. People do that with companies all the time. And it's like, I enjoy this product. I imagine that this product should be 100% aligned. And the company has their own, they just want to make money. And they feel like it's trendy now to, well, now it's like kind of trendy to do the reactionary wishy-washy thing, but they feel like it's trendy to be inclusive, which good. But then these people are allowed, you know, and it's not even like an overwhelming majority of people don't care about what Disney puts on Twitter and don't care. But like this loud, small number, they make themselves loud enough on the internet to make it seem like it's so many people. And yeah, like they're disappointed. They want everything to be their 100% their views, which is a little crazy.
Yeah, and so there's this survey that Axios does every year, and it's like the 100 most visible companies. And then they basically ask people like different metrics about like what they think of that company's reputation. And I think everything you're speaking to, so Disney's ranking dropped significantly Last year it was 37 and this year it's 65. And I think all this speaks to like, it just has to be authentic. We don't want our companies that we like to say the right thing. We want them to actually like inhabit and kind of like feel that way. Otherwise, why do it and then take it back? I mean, that's why I think Disney didn't really get rewarded for eventually coming out and opposing these, because it took them so long. So it was like, you're clearly just doing this because the Disney adults are mad.
Yeah, I feel like Disney took a double hit of like, conservatives stayed mad because they talked about a period and turning red or whatever. And because they suggested a 12-year-old girl would get her period.
I forgot that was part of this.
Yeah, turning red was like also a really weird big part of it, even though it's actually a very cute movie about a panda.
Adorable.
So, but it's like conservatives stayed mad about that. And no one on the left or who supports LGBTQ people was even really impressed with the statement that they ultimately did make. So it really was like, they found a way to like not really benefit in any way, shape or form or do the right thing or get any money.
Like that's when you're going to get like coverage is when you have to backtrack. And, you know, I think I was making fun of
Barbara Streisand effect.
Exactly. Right. Right. I was making fun of a couple weeks ago when this PR firm that represents all these companies, an email leaked where they had been like, you know, you never want to be the first company because they're going to make an example out of you. And I was really dragging at the time, but it's good advice. It's good advice because it just depends. I mean, this list, it doesn't actually make a lot of sense in terms of like how these companies are aligned, because another example they looked at is Patagonia. Patagonia is ranked number 3 for people. Patagonia is a very progressive organization. Like if you actually look at their socials, they're tweeting like end the filibuster. But nobody really knows that because there's not really any like controversy. They kind of get ahead of these things. So nobody's ever like, Patagonia, you can't do that.
Okay, Patagonia.
So, right. So, oh yeah, they're great. They're like Patagonia, dream advertiser. They're just, you know, like slightly to the right of Ben and Jerry's, maybe.
Slightly to the right of Ben and Jerry's is a very funny like corporate politics scale. Because fucking Ben and Jerry's will be like, we've released Cherry Guevara, our new flavor.
Right, right.
And it's fucking great.
And Republicans are never like, fuck Patagonia, don't buy a Patagonia vest. They can't afford, what the fuck are the consultants and Charlotte going to wear if they can't wear Patagonia vests?
Yeah, they they've aligned themselves with Patagonia long ago, stylistically.
Exactly. And Trader Joe's is number 1, which is interesting. I mean, I think there's like a vague liberal connection to that, but only maybe just crunchy. I mean, there's lots of crunchy people that also won't get vaccinated, so.
Yeah, but they're pretty liberal, and like, even the idea of making low-cost organic and healthier options and snacks, and like they're with Aldi, which is also like actually like low cost. It's the same company, Aldi and Trader Joe's.
Cool.
Yeah, so a lot of Trader Joe's stuff, and Aldi's in more lower income areas too, so they are actually pretty progressive. What I'll say is that like when you know a company, it's like make a choice and suffer the consequences. But there are Chick-fil-A, again, like, you know, it's on the outline, but Chick-fil-A is very like clear with LGBT. They don't open on Sunday. So it's like anytime anybody goes there and solicits it, they make a choice. They're making a choice of like, I know what this company stands for and I do or don't want to participate in it. And it's the same thing with Patagonia. Patagonia is like, look, we have our thing. Like they know who they're, you know what they stand for. And, you know, if you want to deal with it, like you deal with it. But I feel like, you know, it's weird because on one end, I'm like, should companies have to align themselves politically? But then it's like, yeah, if I need to know to make my choice, if it really is like this, like they love to say capitalism, laissez-faire, every dollar is a vote for something. I want to know that my money, are you going to pay a racist politician? Because then I'll take my money somewhere else. Where is this money going to? Who's, you know, all this shit? It's so hard because most companies try, you know, but Disney tries to play both sides because they just, you know, and like a lot of, that's like a big criticism, even with tech, is like they try to play both sides or say they're apolitical and stuff. And it's just like, there's no such thing as being apolitical anymore. There's just not.
Right. Yeah. And it also does ultimately feel like this very weird surface level song and dance, not to say like it's better to have companies thinking that, like, promoting these things in whatever way. Like, I'd rather have a company donating books about LGBT youth than not. But I feel like it hides the real shit, which is like, okay, but what are you donating to? Like, what is this company actually funding and shit? Like, even recently, I mean, Elon Musk obviously has been all over the place, but he had that big thing where he was like, I'm not voting Democrat anymore. And it's like, well, actually, you've been donating to Republicans for the past 20 years and we can see those records. So what even is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is, like, if you were voting for Democrats but funding Republican operatives this entire time, I don't really care that you voted for Democrats in California, actually.
Portland Pride. J.P. Morgan said to Portland Pride, can we sponsor everything? And Portland Pride said no, because they had donated to anti-gay politicians in other parts of the country. And J.P. Morgan had to, like, admit to their own, it happened to another company too, to their own staff, like, we had Pride plans, but now we don't, because they said no. So as much as, like, I don't know, it does, like I said, it's like, if it's about authenticity, it does seem like it serves a lot of these companies just to, like, not say anything than to say something and then go back on it. But like Millie was saying, it gives companies that are willing to come forward an opportunity to, like, get, you know, a new class of consumers. Like, if I went and, like, I mean, I have Blue Land, so this isn't a good example, but, like, I am definitely a person where if I was aware of the most ethical and woke option of every single product I use, I would probably always choose it when I could afford it. So just, like, there's so many opportunities for those people to just, like, be those brands and then leave the rest behind. But it is also just looking at this list, it seems like a crapshoot, you know, because you have Patagonia that's saying super radical stuff on Twitter. But if nobody's paying attention, but if Ron DeSantis, you know, this will change the day Ron DeSantis realizes that and picks a fight. So it's really just comes down to, like, if a politician decides to pick a public fight with you, you're going to have a problem unless you react the right way from the beginning. But the best part of this list is that coming in at number 100 on the list of the 100 most visible companies ranked by reputation was the Trump Organization, which means it is the most poorly rated, most visible organization.
Thank God. What are they even doing now?
Running from Letitia James.
I guess they're just paying out legal fees at this point and, like, defending themselves in court. They sold the DC hotel,
Yeah.
They still have Doral.
Yeah, he has the properties that he owns. That's the most interesting thing to me, is I wonder how long Trump Tower stays in New York City.
Try to keep that one, but half of those, like, Trump properties were just, like, people buying his name.
And a lot of them have since taken the name off, like, during the,
yeah, because Trump Tower is one of the ones that I think he owns personally, to whatever degree he actually owns anything, because I think he has negative
$300 million.
He's still paying $10,000 a day because he's in contempt. One day we'll find out where he and Brett Kavanaugh's money comes from. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betch Sub Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.